A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, here we are, myself, Catherine Whittaker, and Matt Roberts, soon to be joined by Simon Briggs of The Telegraph. We are in the media restaurant at Roland Garros. It's surprisingly quiet. These were not the scenes, Matt, 5 hours ago when I stood in line waiting for a disappointing piece of cod for about 45 minutes.
You should have had the chicken. It was great.
Now I feel even worse about the experience. Yeah. Noted for future.
Yeah, but lunchtime in Paris, I had my first experience of it, and the queue was out the door.
I mean, queues being out the door is the French Open experience, isn't it? I mean, we've just been discussing our outrage at the health and safety situation of there being quite so... I mean, the crowds have been... It's been nuts today, the crowds, and today's not even a full schedule. We are going to look into whether this is record attendance for first Sunday at the tournament. This is the Tennis Podcast, by the way, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. As I say, Simon Briggs expected to join momentarily. He loves a dramatic late entrance to Simon Briggs. But yeah, I mean, it is thronging with sweaty tennis fans out there, isn't it?
Which is unusual for a Sunday, as you said. I'm sure you've talked about on the podcast the Sunday start of the French Open maybe seeming a little bit like a bit of a damp squib sometimes, but today, even though the schedule was not as full as it would be as it will be tomorrow, it was packed. I mean, I tried to get over to the complete other side of the stadium from the media centre to get to court 14 to keep an eye on the Humbert Popperin match, and to get there you have to
those are the words, Matt, of a real tennis
yeah, exactly.
Just wanted to keep an eye on that Humbert Popperin match.
Yeah, and to get there you have to go past Chetray, you have to go past Longlon, and you have to go past the lunch stalls, and I managed to travel through at a perfect storm when Longlon was chucking out and it was lunch, and it literally took me, I would say, 10 minutes to go about 20 metres.
If you're going against the flow,
you have no chance.
There's a feeling of absolute despair.
It's like trying to walk on a commuter tube train. I mean, you just wouldn't ever dream of doing it. You just stay where you are, but you have to push through and it. Oh.
Yeah, reaching your destination feels like an impossible dream.
but it's good that there are so many tennis fans.
Yeah.
Putting a positive spin.
We're putting the most negative possible spin on thousands of people coming to enjoy tennis for the day. For me, this has been the most successful Sunday start to a French Open, I think. I've expressed in the past that I feel quite overall just a little bit grumpy about the fact the tournament starts on Sunday. I feel sorry for players that lose on the Sunday, because it's like you were sort of never even in the tournament. But this one's felt proper. It's felt like the tournament really has got going today, rather than a sort of weird prelude type thing. I'm sure the 4 year long wait for Roger Federer to step onto the court has a lot to do with it, and the fact that the tournament started off in such dramatic style. For a while there it looked like we were going to lose Kerber and Muguruza sort of simultaneously. In the end we only lost Kerber in pretty dramatic fashion, and Muguruza fought through to win in very different but equally dramatic fashion against Taylor Townsend, the first match of course ever played on the Simon Mathieu court.
And I think exactly as you mentioned there, the new court, I think there's a real sense of kind of enthusiasm and momentum about this tournament because of the innovations that have happened. The tournament want to show them off, and the fans want to experience them as well.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot to be said for that. It did feel buzzy. In fact, that to me, from what I've seen on the screens, has been the only court that's been just full all day. It doesn't feel like there've been lulls. People have got their seats on that court and they've stuck with them.
They felt like
prized possession. So I watched a lot of Muguruza in that match against Taylor Townsend because it was a joy, really. I mean, I find Muguruza fascinating as an individual. I don't understand her at all. I don't understand her tennis career. I don't understand why she's not doing better. I can speculate, but I basically have no idea. She seems to have absolutely everything, as far as I can gather. What she doesn't have anymore is Conchita Martinez, which is something she had last time she won a slam at Wimbledon a couple of years ago. Of course, she's now with Karolina Pliskova. But Taylor Townsend, in a completely different way, sort of seems to have it all as well, but it hasn't ever come together before, and didn't quite today, but she showed what a glimpse of how it could be if it did one day sparklingly come together. She is great fun.
She's got a fascinatingly quirky game, hasn't she? And
it's a throwback.
It is, and she puts so many sort of different spins on the ball, and the court seemed to be really receptive to them as well. And in that first set, she caused Muguruza all kinds of problems, and I was feeling for our dear friend Charlie Equichet of The Telegraph, who tweeted yesterday how he had Muguruza making the final in his predictions, and it looked like she was about to crash out before lunchtime.
To defend him, he picked Muguruza because she seemed so unlikely, and
yeah,
there is something in that, isn't it? Isn't there? I mean, she seemed so unlikely at Wimbledon a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the problem is with the women's draw in terms of trying to pick a winner is that it's kind of so open, you kind of think anyone could win. But trying to imagine someone winning who's never won one of these things before is quite difficult. But Muguruza obviously has got that experience. So if she can find her game, you know that the occasion, the tournament, is not going to overawe her. It's just a question of whether she has that form. And I tend to make my predictions based on form. I think someone accused us of recency bias with our predictions.
I mean,
but
should we be making predictions based on people's performances from 1978? Yeah, Bjorn Borg's going to win this tournament.
Yeah.
Muguruza did fight through. I had a chat this morning at the top of our Eurosport coverage with Alex Kurecha. And I was just laying it bare to him, that I was saying everything I just said here. I don't understand Garbiñe Muguruza. Help me understand her. What's her relationship like with the Spanish public? And he said to me that she could probably walk down the street a lot of the time in Spain and not be recognised, which I found extraordinary. Now, I realise that Rafael Nadal is absorbing a lot of the limelight, but there is room for two people in the same sport in that limelight. She's a two-time Grand Slam champion. She's very image conscious and image aware. You know, she seems to do all the right things PR-wise in those terms. She's been on the cover of Spanish Vogue and all of that kind of thing. Apparently, she lives in Switzerland, and that's, according to Alex Kurecha, part of potentially the disconnect with the Spanish public. But I just found that fascinating. It feels like Spain doesn't understand her either, maybe. I'm not alone, Matt.
No. Well, I don't understand her either, so that's two of us. And we also spoke about how she had to decide whether to play for Venezuela or Spain, and maybe that comes into it as well. But she really should have a bigger status. I know that the Madrid tournament, when I've been in Madrid, really does try to advertise her, but it's interesting what he says about how she hasn't connected.
She seems to have everything, and she's not. And I don't think it's that she doesn't care. I know she's been accused of that before, but when you see, I mean, she was so stressed out there today, wasn't she? You could feel the tension oozing from her. She doesn't have a good poker face in that regard. So I don't believe you can be that stressed about something you don't care about. Oh, here he is, Simon Briggs, sporting US Open gear.
Yes, I arrived at this tournament with my US Open hat and promptly bought a Roland Garros one. I was getting some funny looks from people.
It's important to Matt to be on brand, not so to Simon. Welcome, Simon.
Hello.
We've covered
beer.
It is beer.
Oh, awesome, thanks.
We try and entice you. We've covered Muguruza. We've agreed that we don't really understand her. Don't understand why she's not an established top five player. But anyway, we've done that. Moving on to Kerber,
which was a far more, well, it was a very easy to understand loss. It was kind of the upset that I think everyone predicted, because she said in her press that she couldn't even walk properly 2 weeks ago, and she came in here with no preparation. And I kind of got the sense that maybe her opponent had read that transcript and just thought, this is an opportunity here, and she just took it from Kerber. It reminded me so much of that Danielle Collins match. It was Kerber at the Australian Open. It was Kerber looking a little bit powerless against a player who can just take the racket out of her hand.
So should we be worried? Because it's happened twice this year. I mean, okay, this resulted in a vacuum, given the injury, not a disaster, but in the context of the year, maybe?
Well, her form is not particularly good. I think at the start of the year, I think most people kind of had her as potentially making a surge for possibly even number one again, given her form right at the start of the year. And then that Danielle Collins match happened, and she hasn't really recovered since then. And obviously now she goes to Wimbledon as the defending champion, which will have a big say on her points
tally.
Well,
maybe that's one reason why it could be good for her to get out of here. I mean, she's always, if you ask her about clay, she's always a bit sarcastic about it in that very German way and says, ah, the surface that I really love. So she makes no bones about the fact that this is where she struggles the most. I mean, of course, if she ever won here, she'd have a career slam.
Goodness me, yeah.
But it's a bit like Stan at Wimbledon. You don't ever see it happening realistically. But I think it could be good for her to get out of here. She's mentally quite a tough cookie, isn't she? If she gets some practice together, starts feeling physically good, she can definitely put a run together and make a strong defence of the Wimbledon title.
Yeah, wow. She obviously never defended a slam before. But I was just about to theorise the exact opposite, actually, which is that I don't think being at the top suits her. I know she's not world number one, but, you know, defending a slam, defending positions, defending status suits her. I think she likes being a chaser. I think she's a year on, year off kind of gal.
Well, she's been exactly that, hasn't she? On in 16, off in 17, on again, and now off again.
I mean, it's not enough data to draw decisive conclusions, but it's a theory.
I think grass is going to be more conducive, isn't it? She's a sort of flat hitter, particularly that forehand up the line, which is her signature shot. It's a pretty lethal on a grass court, skidding on.
Kerber upset aside, what's the big story for you today, Simon? Is it Federer?
Yeah, I think so. 700 words on Federer and a pretty flowery effort to try and create a Brit preview when there were limited number of quotes. I've actually ended up quoting "Allo, allo." That's how desperate it was.
Can you give us a preview of that?
What was the quote?
I
quoted the German commander who said that the French are always unreliable, especially after lunch.
Is that an attempt to bolster Kyle Edmund's spirits ahead of tomorrow?
Well, it's kind of complicated, but I had to try and, inject some attempt at colour. I'm not sure it works.
700 words on Federer sounds good fun, though. I mean, there was 700 words of stuff to write about, not least the fact that he walked out onto Philippe Chatrier, first time in 4 years, dressed as sort of the most stylish turd in history. I mean, what is that?
Well, he technically walked out in Wimbledon kit because he was all white, and then he took off the top, and then
to reveal something significantly.
He was brown. Brown and unflushable, is what you're saying.
So, I mean, come on.
People have said FedEx, but I looked FedEx up and they're blue. I don't understand that thing.
I know style is personal, but is there anyone out there that thinks a pale brown is a good look? I think they were probably trying to tone in with
the new
seats. Look Chatrier, but
it hasn't worked.
There is nothing that pale brown tones with.
And also, as Federer said to Simon's answer in the press conference, when you have the full stadium on Chatrier, you can't see the new seats, so you're not blending in with anything.
Maybe giving them too much credit.
How many of the 700 words were dedicated to description of that particular shade of brown?
There was a little bit. I mean, I think I said that it takes a special clothes horse to make beige look bold.
I mean,
but he just about pulled it off.
I'm quite certain that nobody would have looked better in that shade of pale brown than Roger Federer.
That was kind of my point. I thought he kind of got away with it. I think when you design a clay court outfit, it's about how it looks against the red, and I think it looked okay against that.
Oh.
And also he played well, so that leaves a positive image.
He did play really well.
If he has an absolute stinker, and that image of him in that brown t-shirt will just be, you know, will linger in our minds, I think.
You need to file that stinker line away for future, maybe in a few rounds' time.
A lingering stench.
Anyway, he was great today, wasn't he?
Lovely.
Particularly
and
in the
match.
First set. A great, for a very scoreline-wise, one-sided, straight sets match, it was fantastic fun, wasn't it? Sonego, brilliant value.
Yeah, he's only won 14 ATP matches, which is obviously six fewer than Federer has Grand Slam. So the gap in experience there was vast. But in the first set, it looked to me like he had a little bit of stage fright, Sonego, like he almost allowed Federer to express himself, which once you've done that, you're toast, really. But then he fought really well and made a match of it in the third set.
It was hot and sunny when he played, which definitely helped Federer, didn't it?
Well, it changed. It actually got... I should have mentioned this. I didn't put it in the piece, but it was coming
direct
over...
Direct people towards the tennis podcast
bit,
for the addendum to your piece.
It was coming over like it was going to drizzle, and I wondered... You know, there was a come-on, wasn't there, at the 3-3, and I wondered if Roger was thinking, oh, I'm not quite sure what the weather's doing here. I'd like to get this done. That was the only moment of emotion, wasn't it, in an otherwise serene performance.
Did you attend his press conference?
Yeah.
Was he asked whether he has any plans to... Because, of course, famously, when he played on the Sunday last, he flew back home.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
In the intervening period, which is pretty extraordinary. I mean, I know home's not far away, but to take a little jaunt home during a Grand Slam, private jet or not, is...
There were some fairly broad-brush, unsatisfying questions, I would say, in that press conference, and we didn't get onto that, but we should have done. He did mention that he's going to have 2.5 days before he plays again, so I figured that that's perhaps why he, unlike the others, decided he wanted to play Sunday.
Is that too much time?
Well, I think recovery is what's going to be the key to his tournament. You know, it's all about getting it done quickly here, because it is more physical, and he has to keep his energy up.
It was at the O2 last year, wasn't it, where he said, I've decided I'm just not going to practice.
Yeah, after that horrendous match he played against Nishikori, where he couldn't find the strings.
But don't you think that on clay that's not an option for him?
No, probably not, but I mean...
But I think it is about the recovery, because in Rome, when he had to play the back-to-back matches, didn't he? And then he obviously wasn't feeling right the next day, but there's going to be no such issues.
Prior to him on Philippe Chatrier, just in between, in a Federer Kerber sandwich, or should I say Potapova sandwich, we had Stefanos Tsitsipas, who was in majestic form.
Looking a lot better than he did when we recorded the preview podcast.
Well, he did look, he was all sorts of grumpy. I saw him at dinner last night, and that, trust me, that is not a brag, because this was not a glamorous restaurant. It was the only thing, I mean, it's absolutely fine, but basically you go there because it's next door to the hotel and you're too tired to go anywhere else. It's a really bog standard pizza and pasta. And he was the most relaxed guy I've ever seen on the eve of a Grand Slam. He was there with his whole family. He had his sister sat on his knee. He was just loving it. Absolutely loving it. And I started to feel bad for saying he was being grumpy during practice, but he was being grumpy during practice. That
he
wasn't
was,
a good
but some
practice.
Of the drills he was doing, I saw them almost reflected in the way that he's looking for that cross-court backhand winner and almost using his backhand as a weapon. But I just watch him and I think everything is so solid, you know, because he's like, so he's an elegant, touchy kind of player, but what really strikes me is just how totally accurate he is, and he just doesn't give you the kind of silly errors that, I mean, if you think about the Dimitrov comparison, maybe it's somebody else who's a stylist. We'll come on to him, I'm sure. There's just nothing to get your teeth into. He gets it done point after point, and it's so playing the percentages. Even though he looks elegant, actually, if you track the ball, it's very steady, it's big targets, and very smart thinking all the way through.
Do you have him beating Roger Federer in your predictions, Simon?
I didn't do predictions. apart from Pliskova, who I felt good about.
Simon ditched Brindle.
Yeah, no, Simon swapped with Charlie this year.
The thing is that my build-ups to slams are quite painful.
And they don't need the extra pain of predictions.
No, I just don't. I mean, once a slam starts, I have a great time, but the 3 days before a slam are always quite unpleasant.
You've mentioned Dimitrov, Simon.
Mm-hmm.
That, for me, I only saw it in patches, but it was one of the matches of the day, if not the match of the day, against Janko Tipsarevic on court number one, the Bullring court, which I believe is scheduled to be,
going to be knocked down
to
and
be
replaced
no more.
With a kind of garden, I think, of the sort that we see in Melbourne Park.
Some space.
Yeah, because that side has actually got cramped up, hasn't it? Because by the expansion of Châtrier. And yes, it is quite draining to make your way through the crowds out there. I'm sure people are going to feel terribly sorry for us.
Well, we've already ranted about that for 10 minutes.
We opened up with a 5-minute rant about how difficult it is to get from A to B. Yeah,
I mean, everyone's feeling really, really sorry for you.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Well, we did put a positive spin on it eventually.
The struggle is real, Simon. The struggle is real. But yeah, it would be a shame to lose the Bullring court. I mean, from the outside... it's a monstrosity, but from the inside, it's great.
And it's always been the court that people have had this fondness for, and it's almost been replaced now, that fondness, with the new Simone Mathieu. So that I kind of felt like that Dimitrov Tipsarevic match today was the Bullring just fighting back, saying, "Look, we're still the court with the good matches." And then of course there was that epic on Simone Mathieu, which we'll get to. But for Dimitrov, it was so on brand, wasn't it, that to be two sets up, having one of them as a bagel, and then suddenly staring defeat in the face, it would have just fitted his narrative of 2019 so perfectly.
Yeah, he's 6-3, 6-love up on Janko Tipsarevic, and then lo and behold, here we are in a fifth set.
And he said in press that he was almost a bit deceived by Tipsarevic, because he felt like Tipsarevic was done physically and he felt like he had the match. And then suddenly he let that get to him and lost all concentration, and errors started flowing, and suddenly he was in a fifth set.
And Matt, you asked him in press conference about which I popped out there to see what I hoped would be the last few games of the match, turned out to be just the last game of the match, which was Dimitrov very nervily serving it out. I mean, he was gripping the racket so tightly you felt like it could sort of crumble into smithereens at any moment. But he did eventually succeed in doing that. 6-4 in the fifth? 6-4 in the fifth. But you asked him about his extremely muted celebration, because it was very notable.
Yeah, and particularly notable given the fact that it was such a dramatic match. He just didn't celebrate at all. And I asked him, and he said, "Well, I want to see this as the start of something. I don't want this to be..." Simon's pulled a face, the same face I pulled in the press conference.
I think you enjoy it while you can, Gregor, the way it's going.
I chippily said, "Did you think Geneva qualifying was the start of something before losing to Federico Delbonis in round one?" I mean...
We all love him, don't we?
We all love him.
He's a top bloke. He's a lovely player to watch.
It's almost... We're sort of playing mind games with ourselves because we don't want to hope anymore, do we?
But he's not in a good place.
And he also admitted that he has still got a shoulder problem, which he seems to have had for ages.
And yet it's the start of something.
And he's got Marin Cilic next.
It's the start of something great, Simon. That's what you should be writing about. The start of something great for Grigor Dimitrov.
No, he's not in a good place, is he? I mean, just every time I looked at the telly, he was like 3 yards behind the baseline, sort of trying to chop a retrieval shot. And I was just thinking, this cannot be where you were meant to be, Grigor. You were meant to be in there with the top 10 seeding.
We couldn't see any evidence of Andre Agassi around. Have you seen any Agassi?
No, but I didn't get down to the Bullring, so...
No, as far as I could tell, Agassi is not in tow. I don't think that means that they've split.
Definitely haven't.
They definitely, but I think it's evolved into a sort of ongoing mentoring type relationship. I don't think it's a coaching type setup where they're talking about forehands and backhands. I think he's just sort of they're on a spiritual level together.
But he needs someone for the nuts and bolts.
Oh, well, he's got Stepanek now, so that he's...
Is he the guy?
He's reformed that team that didn't really work with Djokovic. Actually didn't work
Let's
at all.
Let's get that really unsuccessful band back together.
Yeah. Although, obviously, Djokovic was not in a good place when they were with him either.
What is it? They're like the Salvage Corporation.
Heading back over to Simone Mathieu, which saw some great matches today, we saw Svitolina... Venus, which looked for a long time like it was going to go to a third set. Svitolina took the first. Venus was a break up in the second, and then all of a sudden Svitolina breaks back, and it's sort of an avalanche of Svitolina, who is still obviously suffering with the knee injury, given movement is sort of the main thrust of her game. It was still better than average, but she needs it to be the best in the biz to have a chance. She's got the strapping around the knee. She's been doing a BBC Sport column this week, and she all but said, look, if it wasn't Roland Garros, I probably wouldn't be playing.
Oh, really?
She said, this is my favourite slam.
That's not smart, though, is it? I mean, think about the places that you're going to compete for the title when you're at that level. And maybe that's the mentality that she's always had. Like, she needs to think of herself more of somebody who's competing for titles and not going to play in the French because she likes it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, bit of imposter syndrome, maybe, yeah.
I didn't have her as a factor in this tournament at all, but she did play a lot better today than I thought she was going to. And she seems very comfortable in France as well, doesn't she?
Yeah, she said it feels like home, actually. And she obviously loved playing on that court and found all of that a great honour.
That's a bit insulting. We've claimed her as an honorary Brit, haven't we, via her place in Chelsea.
Are you also claiming Jeremy Shardy as an honorary Brit?
Oh, definitely, London-based. And I'm claiming Annette Contevet as an honorary Brit because she has an amazing English accent and enjoys watching Made in Chelsea.
Donna Vekic has a good English accent. She trained in the UK for a long time, didn't she?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Matt has a theory that Jeremy Shardy is a Fulham fan.
I do, yeah. Based purely on his social media likes. I've been stalking him.
Following closely.
Yeah.
What did we see, Matt, on... You were following the match on Simon Mathieu before that Svitolina-Venus Williams match, which also went to five sets.
Yeah, which was last year's semi-finalist Cecchinato going out from two sets up to Mau.
That's sort of a relief, isn't it?
Why is that a relief?
Well, we know about Cecchinato and his background, and it's not a subject that anyone really wants to have to get into again.
But you would have no choice to get into if he did become a feature of the tournament.
Yeah, I guess.
But it was lovely. I mean,
do you just want an easy life, Simon?
Well, it's so difficult because it didn't come to a conclusion because of purely sort of small print reasons. And
there's a lot of those. There's a lot of small print.
Yeah, and it's just all so unsatisfactory and messy. And he seems like an anomaly. There was a funny tweet from Jeannie Bouchard, wasn't there? She tweeted...
Not a repeatable phrase.
She tweeted, was it, who's this guy or something like this? But it was ironic because she'd done the same thing a year ago when he turned up from nowhere and went to the semi-finals.
But he's.
Right. I should be following her. I think I have her muted on social media. Actually, I find it does my head in.
He's one of those players, Cecchinato, who probably you could put in the clay court specialist category. I know we were talking recently about how they seem to be a bit of a dying breed, but he probably is one. And the French Open made up so many of his ranking points that he's now going to drop out of the top 40 probably with that loss. But on the flip side, Mahou, this was his 12th Grand Slam wild card. And he said in his press how he was really grateful for it, but he considered giving it back because he was feeling kind of injured at the weekend. And then, of course, his son came on court, and whenever that happens, Kefi goes a bit funny.
He played the cute son coming on court.
He did it last year.
I also feel quite a lot of warmth for Mo because he's been ditched by Pierre Hugerbert this year to focus on his singles.
And it's also nice for him to have a moment in France because I feel like he's not a clay court player, and most of the tennis in France is on clay. And there was that Davis Cup final where he was dropped, wasn't he? So he's never really had much of a moment in France, but playing the best match on the new court was probably it.
He's had his moment. Matt was watching.
I remember a couple of years ago, because this Sunday is often such a drab affair with no... I mean, the Federer playing was a big lift for what would otherwise have been a bit of a weak schedule. A couple of years ago, I spent Sunday writing about the French ability to play well and lose in a piece based around Pierre Hugerbert, who I think lost to Isner that day, or somebody like that, played well and lost.
He's focusing on his singles now, so maybe he'll play well and win.
They haven't really changed, have they? And the French brain is... you've spoken about the French brain on the podcast before.
Style over substance. Style at
There's only ever
costs.
One French brain, isn't there? But it gets passed around. So only one Frenchman can have it in any given week. Have you heard this theory?
Well, who's got it this week?
Well, we can't quite...
Kiki Mladenovic won.
No, I think the women are maybe different.
Okay.
Or Benoit Paire, champion.
Benoit Paire, it definitely had it last week.
Yeah, but that does that not, by default, mean he won't have it this week?
I think, yeah, that's probably right.
Benoit Paire, who, footnote, before we just quickly look ahead to tomorrow, has played all 18 weeks on either the ATP or Challenger Tour this year. That is extraordinary.
He has... seen whatever Dominic Thiem's crazy schedule is and just raise the
people
bar.
Think of him as somebody whose interest in tennis is not always all there. Well, I mean, how you don't do that if you don't blooming love playing tennis. Just a few other quick results from today. Karolina Pliskova won very convincingly. Marin Cilic, straight sets win for him. We haven't said that very much recently. Kei Nishikori got it done in straight sets.
Did he underarm serve?
He did not underarm serve.
Right.
He's let us down.
That was definitely a fake promise.
Yeah.
And he's never going to come through on that. Now that you've reminded me of that, I'm disappointed I haven't gone to his press conference and quizzed him on that.
There's time, because he's still in.
Straight sets winner, Sloane Stephens, straight sets winner. I think that's all the major results. Belinda Bencic, Alexei Popperin won through over Hugo Humbert in four sets.
How skinny is Hugo Humbert?
Oh, very.
Alexei Popperin's pretty skinny.
I know, but he looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger compared to Humbert.
He barely leaves a trace of Humbert in the clay.
Yeah, exactly.
And... it was a strange match. He won the first 25 points on his serve, Humbert. Popperin just couldn't get near his serve. It's not like Humbert's got a big serve. He sort of dollies at him, really. But he won 25 points in a row, and then the match just completely flipped, and he lost.
French brain.
Yeah.
French brain. Being coached by Pat Cash at the moment, Alexei Popperin, for this tournament and for the grass court season. Kuchova beat Svetlana Kuznetsova. Diego Schwartzman got embroiled in the five setter with Martin Fucsovics. Siegmund won. Jera, somebody that I've never heard of called Otter.
Yeah, but he was a qualifier. He beat James Ward in the first round and looked really good. I did see a little bit of him on the qualifying courts.
Vondrusheva won.
Vondrusheva now plays Potapova in the teenage clash, and the winner of that could possibly face Yastremska, the winner of...
You've got her winning the title.
Well, I've not got her winning the title. I think I put her in the quarterfinals, but she's got lots of momentum.
Kozlova and gone with Yastremska.
Kozmova.
Oh, my God.
Who's first on Simone Mathieu tomorrow?
Yes, schedule for tomorrow. We start on Philippe Chatrier with Wozniacki versus Kudermetova. Then we've got Rafael Nadal against Yannick Hanfmann. Hands off if you've heard of him.
He's only ever played one main draw match in a slam.
Doesn't sound good for him, does it?
So have a go at Rafa on Chatrier, why don't you?
Djokovic against Hurkacz. I think Hurkacz is getting
there. That's a great lineup. That's a fascinating one.
If Djokovic is a bit nervous, I mean, I think he's winning it, but if he's a bit nervous, I think Hurkacz
he's almost
have
like
a
Medvedev, like he's going to trade.
Yeah.
And Djokovic hasn't enjoyed that this year.
Serena Williams against Vitalia Dierchenko. Nobody has any idea what to expect whatsoever from that. Kiki Bertens starts on Longlen, then Kvitova, then Songa against Goyovchik, and Dominic Thiem rounds it off on there. Over on Simone Mathieu, it's Elise Cornet against Victoria Kuzmova, who we're not even going to talk about because Matt's ditched her for Dariana Yastremska. Gasquet against Misha Zverev-Wawrinka. against Kovalik, Sam Stosur against Barbora Strizova. I'm pleased they've given Sam Stosur a good court because she's a former finalist here. And then we have Yulia Gerges, Ash Barty, Borna Coric, Jeremy Shardy and Kyle Edmund, two Brits.
It's actually an absolutely packed...
It's a great schedule tomorrow.
Yeah. It's a brilliant schedule. And yeah, the only problem from a British point of view, Joe Condra on first and Kyle Edmund on last. You buggers.
Well, they've given you a nice gap in the day to write up Joe Conta. And then you can turn your attention
Simon
to
doesn't
Kyle.
Need a gap.
Yeah, get it done. Get it done and get down the pub.
Antonia Lochner. She's 22 and she's from Dusseldorf and she beat Belinda Bencic last month. That is Joe Conta's opponent and that is all I know about her.
Yeah, she's not played a top 100 player since that tournament in Lugano.
Does anybody see any upsets happening tomorrow? Do we see anything to watch?
Serena is a big question mark.
Yeah,
in the state of fitness that she's in.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there will be an upset. I wouldn't want to predict where it is.
Great. Matt Roberts says there will be an upset in one of those sort of 400 matches I just read out. So just keep across all of them or listen to tomorrow's second daily tennis podcast from the 2019 French Open. It's been brought to you today in association with The Telegraph, with Simon Briggs of The Telegraph. Read his 700 words on Roger Federer in tomorrow's paper or today's paper, depending on when you're listening
to this.
Preview,
frankly.
I'll be reading it just to...
For the hello content.
For the hello content and for the descriptive words used for Roger Federer's outfit. And we're brought to you... Who else have we brought to you in association with? A dog, Rio with a Y. He's great. I'm a big fan of his Instagram
And here we
please.
He's a Tsitsipas fan. Tsitsipas one today.
Tsitsipas fan. Is Tsitsipas a dog lover?
Pass.
To be established. I'll get onto that as a matter of priority.
He probably wouldn't want to be, like, because that would be too Zverev-ish.
Oh,
good point.
Fair enough. But I will confirm, because I wouldn't want to do him the disservice of assuming he's not a dog lover if he is, because there can be no greater disservice. Tennisballs.com, there are executive producers. And, yeah, we'll be back tomorrow for our second daily Grand Slam French Open tennis podcast. We'll see you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.